Very happy to be back with Marin Sangha tonight. Nice to see a lot of familiar faces. And recently, I got off of a three-week retreat. And so I'm still metabolizing that retreat and kind of in more of that kind of practice space right now. So I'd like to share a facet of that retreat practice with you. And this is a topic many of you know about. It'll be kind of a review and perhaps a deeper dive for some or many. The topic is Anapanasati, the Buddha's classical instructions, progressive instructions on mindfulness of breathing. And just a quick scholarly note, I'll mostly be using Gil Fronstal's translations. I will be glossing them with some of my own of the Pali. And just to say that in the ancient Pali language, scriptural language of early Buddhism, the earliest recorded teachings of the Buddha, this Anapanasati is the only comprehensive, detailed set of meditation instructions the Buddha gave that he is on record as saying that he practiced after his awakening as well as before his awakening. He also talked about concentration states, jhanas, but for many people, those are not progressive instructions. They're more things that happen by invitation, shall we say, if you're lucky, on deep retreat. This is progressive instruction he gave that's available to anyone, pretty much anyone. And it's worth noting that even in the beginning of the discourse, the mindfulness of breathing discourse, he starts by appreciating this wide array, this big range of diversity of practices, including metta and mindfulness of the body and other forms of practice. So this isn't the only one. It just happens to be the one that is the focus tonight. So, as I mentioned, it's a framework of sequential instructions, or it can be considered a description of what can naturally emerge as the practice matures, as it deepens, either within a single meditation session, within a retreat, or over the course of years or decades of practice. And the Buddha taught that it can be a complete path in of itself. It can include the four foundations of mindfulness or four frames of reference. It can include the seven factors of awakening, all within this one sequential framework. Now I keep using the word sequential and path and framework, and it is a list because especially in the early oral culture of ancient India, lists were very important for memorization and are kind of limited to them in some ways by language, to this sequential time-based way of looking at things. But these stages don't necessarily happen in order, and all of them don't have to emerge. You can hop around, you can think of it more as a mandala or as an intuitive process. So don't feel like, oh, if my experience doesn't match this, you know, sequential list, I'm doing it wrong or it's wrong. It just means it's emerging differently. There's nothing wrong with that. This is pretty comprehensive. And some of the stages can be so subtle that they can barely be noticed. So it's divided into this discourse, four what are called tetrads, four sets of four phrases or instructions. And the last two sets of four, the last two tetrads, describe the highest reaches of the path of practice. More emergent. They're not things most people can make happen, but they emerge from the conditions that we lay down in the more basic levels of the practice. Now, that said, a little bit of everything I talk about tonight can be tasted or evoked, even in daily life. And every little bit, if noticed, appreciated with mindfulness, is onward leading. It's kind of a virtuous spiral, if you will. What I love about this practice is it can be very useful and portable in daily life. And I'll touch on that more as we go along. But meanwhile, my invitation to you is to meditate or perhaps just notice your breathing as this talk unfolds. Okay, so it can almost be meditation instructions if you want it to be. All in all, the general movement is towards letting go, releasing clinging, relaxing, letting go of craving. So the Buddha's instructions start with the foundation. And it's just like the instructions I gave tonight, actually, in the guided meditation. He suggests that practitioners find a suitable spot and then take an upright posture, grounded with a balance of relaxation and alertness, and bring lucid awareness, mindfulness to the forefront of attention. That can mean right in the forefront of the body with the breathing, or for me, it tends to mean more awareness all around, within and around the body. So that's the foundation. And then the four tetrads, four sets of four, involve breath and body, feelings and mental constructs, the heart mind itself, or the state of mind, and insight. As I said, in all four sets, the general movement is towards letting go, relaxation, relaxing agitation. So the first tetrad involves the breath and the body, knowing each breath as long, in-breath as long, out-breath as long, in-breath as short, out-breath as short. And I think of this as kind of being these instructions, being a stand-in for any quality that breathing can take. So ragged breath as ragged breath, shallow breath as shallow breath, flat, boring breath as flat breath, beautiful, vibrant, relaxing breath as just that. Noticing, just noticing. Not needing to change. And it's okay to experiment at this stage. You might experiment with where it feels most useful. So more useful to really allow the belly to sort of relax outwards and invite the breath in. Some people find it more useful to focus on the sides or even the back of the rib cage. Other people find it very useful to focus on the back of the throat or the tip of the nose, but to play and notice what feels right, what feels best, what feels most connecting. Mostly though, it's just to allow what's happening. It's more emergent versus controlling. I learned this kind of early on in my Vipassana practice. I had been practicing Zen meditation for a couple of years and went to my first day-long Vipassana retreat at Spirit Rock. And I still remember the two very experienced teachers, really experienced teachers. And, you know, I was just avid, you know, I was in the first three rows and I was just riveted. And I was trying really, really hard to follow all the instructions. And at a certain point, one of the teachers looked me right in the eye because he could see how much I was efforting with the breath and happened to mention that if one tries too hard to take a deep breath, it's actually possible to displace a rib, right? And I did have sore ribs at the end of that day long. That's so controlling isn't necessarily so helpful. And we get more and more subtle about that the longer we practice, right? But to notice when the mind controls and you can't help it, to be okay with that too. the quality of the breath for me has become this kind of tell, this barometer, this attunement for what else is going on in the body, in my heart, my mind, right? Sometimes I don't know I'm tense until I've realized I've been holding my breath, riveted to that, you know, news article or email or whatever it is, task. But to reattune to the breathing can break a cycle of tension that way. And in my own work, it's also a barometer for what's going on externally. So I work with people, supporting people. And it can be really helpful, especially in crisis situations, to notice and even at times match the breathing of the person I'm with. I learned this from a book by Stephen and Andrea Levine in their hospice work, that when someone is really struggling, it's really kind of helpful to match the breathing with them and then to relax your own breathing. And that doesn't just relax you, it relaxes them. And then you have this positive, helpful feedback loop happening between you. Right? There are times in hospice work or hospital chaplaincy or daily life when the breath can be too labored or too triggering. For example, if someone's on the verge of an asthma attack, then this is happening for you. At any point, it's really a good time to go to some of those other practices that the Buddha extolled in this discourse. It could be metta, it could be attending to sound, different touch points in the body. Any kind of visualization or recollection practice can be super helpful when the body is not cooperative. Okay. So the third phrase of this first group of four. One trains, I will breathe in, experiencing the whole body. I will breathe out, experiencing the whole body. That's pretty straightforward, right? And as people do, because we're people, over the millennia, there have been debates about the meaning of these phrases. Does it mean the whole body of the breath, meaning the entire cycle of the in and out? Or does it mean the whole physical body? Or does it mean the vibrancy of the transpiration and all the breath movement, the chi, if you will, throughout the whole body? So I guess I'll weigh in with an opinion, knowing it's just an opinion, but it's influenced by having taken two classes in Asian art history back when I was in college. And the instructor pointed out that you could tell when the Indian sculptors were first able to incorporate prana, life breath, or in Pali, panna, into the sculptures, because the figures, the human figures, including the ones of the Buddha, became alive. And this is a very important concept in ancient India, this vibrancy, this aliveness of the life breath. Prana, panna. Noticing that vibrancy through the whole body. It can also be just noticing and being with the body exactly as it is. It can be incredibly grounding, settling, as all of you have no doubt experienced. It can even be healing to allow the body to express itself. The fourth part of this first set of four, this first tetrad. One trains, I will breathe in, calming the bodily formation. Or you could say relaxing the bodily formation. I will breathe out, relaxing the bodily formation. So bodily formation, what the heck is that? My understanding is that the bodily formation is any of the holding, the karmic patterns, if you will, the tensions, posture, facial defaults that we've developed based on the activities of our minds and what we've incorporated from our life experience, good and bad. But what is held unconsciously, often in the body. Most people notice this in their shoulders or neck, belly, jaw, face, forehead. And that squint so many of us get as the eyes start to go a little bit in midlife. So it can have physical causes as well as mental causes. Bodily formation, the held patterns. So this then brings us noticing that and calming it, allowing it to soften, not making or demanding, but just allowing the softening. Okay, so those are the basic instructions and the general sense I have for myself and my own practice is that most of the attention is very fruitfully put in this first tetrad, this first set of four in the foundation. And part of the reason for that is each one of these instructions is something we have some influence over. Maybe not a lot. You know, the calming and relaxing bit might only be a little bit some days, some situations. But they're accessible and can be done. And as I move forward, progressing through the next three sets of four, they tend to be more emergent. There's some ability to influence, perhaps. There's definitely the capacity to invite and cultivate, and that grows over time with depth of practice. So this second tetrad is, I'll just read it first. One trains, I will breathe in, experiencing joy. One trains, I will breathe out, experiencing joy. And the word for joy here, pitti, has other translations that I also like. My favorite is rapt interest. Really into it. Really into the breath. Really into the moment. It also has connotations of just contentment, simple contentment. And then for some people in some situations, the most appropriate translation is rapture, where you get the tingles all over your body. Sense of rain, pleasure. So any of those can apply. And to emphasize that those are influenced by different levels of samadhi, unification, concentration, settledness. Yet all of them are onward leading. All of them are onward leading. So it's not like having one is better than the other. Right? Zeal, enthusiasm, alert contentment. Those are some other words you can use. In some ways, I think of this as the joy of appreciation for the breath as the lifelong companion. And the interest can increase the more we take this exploration with us in daily life. These little interstitial moments of life, moments of waiting, whether it's waiting for the computer to boot up or being on hold in a call, waiting at a stoplight. It can take a few moments, like, what's the breathing doing? And that actually generates momentum too. It's also a very different frame on waiting, much more pleasurable. So the next part of this tetrad is training to breathe in, experiencing happiness. Breathe out experiencing happiness. And that word for happiness can also mean pleasure, ease, even a sense of agreeability. And when settled, when the concentration of the mind is unified, this can be really pleasurable. It can even just be really pleasurable in a really subtle way, right? In daily life, sometimes breathing is just way preferable to my mind's hamster wheel going, wherever it's naturally inclined, based on whatever the inputs have been. Breathing can be a whole lot better, right? I'm sure this has never happened to any of you. An attitude of gratitude for the breath allows this to emerge more fully. Thich Nhat Hanh described this as the absence of a toothache, being grateful for the absence of a problem. Right? Yeah. The third set of phrases, I will breathe in, experiencing mental formations. I will breathe out, experiencing mental formations. Mental formations, meaning mental activity. This also includes any activity of the citta, the heart mind. So emotions, views, beliefs, judgments can include loving kindness, compassion. So any mental activity. So one of the most fruitful things when noticing mental activity is to notice its effect on the body, the heart, the mind, the mood. And this in itself brings an element of wisdom, discernment into the process and allows mindfulness to start correcting for anything that's not so helpful. Right? So to be inclusive. And to kind of have the weight of the attention in this practice on the breath and the body. It's almost like it's an anchor. It keeps us tethered to the present moment because this is the place. Most of you already know this. It is so easy to get sucked into the virtual reality engine going rather than to stay in the moment. And all of us get pulled into a train of thought. Just, you know, you get off at the next station, go back to a breath. Can always return to the body, resource, grounding. Then the last stage of this second set, one trains, I will breathe in, calming the mental formations. And I will breathe out, calming, relaxing the mental activity. So in addition to what I was just saying about returning to the body and the breath, allowing relaxation, space, simplicity. Sometimes it can be helpful to visualize the thoughts as birds or clouds, and then intentionally allow the attention to go to the space around them, the sky. Right? Or to notice what's observing all this activity. What's the attitude of that? And that brings us to the third tetra, the third set of four, which is experiencing the heart mind, the citta. And this is, I'm going to read the whole thing and then talk about it. But basically, it's how we are aware. One trains, I will breathe in, experiencing the mind, the heart. I will breathe out, experiencing the heart and the mind. When trained, I will breathe in, gladdening the heart-mind. Breathing out, gladdening the heart-mind. Breathing in, unifying the heart and mind. And breathing out, unifying the heart and mind. And then finally, breathing in, releasing the heart and mind, and breathing out, releasing the heart and mind. So here we are firmly in the area of allowing, inviting, noticing what emerges, rather than controlling necessarily. So that first part about experiencing the heart and mind, the citta. As I said, this is how we are aware. Perhaps the relationship to experience, or the attitude, the mood, overall mood, mind state. This is a matter often of noticing, not to judge, but just to be aware of it. Because if we're aware of it, it doesn't have us by the nose. It's not pulling us around anymore. The classic instructions are to be aware of a mind with and without greed or craving, a heart mind with or without ill will, with or without delusion, a heart mind that is collected or scattered and distracted, a quality of attention that's expanded or not expanded, steadied or unsteadied, liberated or not liberated. For myself, really helpful qualities to cultivate in this whole tetrad, especially here, is to try to be playful, light, receptive, interested, allowing, a dash of humor, perhaps, but not the sarcastic mean kind. I'm a laughing with, not a laughing at. We all are human, right? Can be a real mess in there sometimes. The second step, the gladdening of the heart and mind. Within these instructions, this mandala, this list or progressive framework, this kind of gladdening is of non-distraction, stability of attention, and the heart and mind can also be gladdened with simple things like bringing in gratitude, appreciation, metta, even compassion can gladden the mind and heart. And that, whatever that positive valence is, that goodness, feeling satisfied in the heart and mind at this time, can then naturally allow the attention, the mind, to unify, to settle, to concentrate. For many, this takes some time to drop into, a certain number of minutes or more of meditation, a certain number of days on retreat, a really good day when you're not working, whatever it is. And for many of us, we do have tastes of this in flow activities, whether you're a runner or a musician or an artist, a writer, and things are just flowing. Catch that wave, so to speak, in surfing, right? When it's just flowing and everything, all of the attention is naturally drawn in to the activity. It's a very joyful, easeful state, right? So you might consider, as I'm talking, a flow activity for yourself. And you may notice little bursts of the same kind of thing, either in breath meditation or in other activities, other moments of the life. It doesn't have to last very long to be onward leading. These bursts can last for seconds and drop the mind into insight. It's not like we have to hold on to it for hours or days. It can come and go, come and go. Even that can be flow. The really helpful thing in breath meditation with noticing this is to notice carefully, but don't try too hard. Trying too hard is not helpful. Okay, so then the last instruction, to release the mind. Releasing the mind or liberating the mind sounds very grand, right? Because we have certain connotations with the words liberate and release in Buddhism. But here it's talking about a temporary release, a letting go, allowing the heart, the mind, the attention to let go. Can be a release from unwholesome concerns, from mental activity, from tension. It can take all kinds of different forms. And now we've reached the fourth set of four. And this is firmly in the terrain of insight. So it's much more of an effect than the others. And it ripens with time with appropriate conditions. And rather than trying for it, which is a big ball of dukkha, to notice it, appreciate it, allow it, be nourished by it if and when it happens. So I'll read. One trains, I will breathe in, observing inconstancy, anicca. I will breathe out, observing inconstancy. I will breathe in, observing fading away, dispassion. I will breathe out, observing fading away. When trained, I will breathe in, observing cessation, nirodha. I will breathe out, observing cessation. And I will breathe in, observing letting go, giving away, relinquishment. I will breathe out, observing letting go, giving away, relinquishment. Pachahana is the Pali. So as I said, these are depictions of insight emerging from deep meditation, usually accessible only on retreat or self-retreat, and often after a lot of cultivation. And that said, it's possible to have glimpses of this also in daily life, little hints, little touches. The wind in the grasses, the inconstancy of the play of the wind. Or the way the trees across the landscape move. The chanting sound of crickets at night. The hypnotic movement of ocean waves and the sound of the waves striking the beach, softening the sand. Candle flame. For all of these examples of natural beauty, elemental beauty, that can give us little tastes, evocations of inconstancy. So, just to remember, in this overall progression, this four steps of four, the general movement is towards letting go, relaxation, release of any kind of agitation, but especially the agitation of clinging or craving. So in closing, the breath can be your barometer, your resource. It can help simplify, settle, and encourage a kind of inner simplicity. It's a portable practice that invites daily life contentment and inner meditative silence that can help bring about wisdom. Thank you for your kind attention. So I think we have about 5 minutes for any questions or comments people have. If you have them, you certainly don't have to. Yes, please, Deborah.
I just want to say thank you for that talk and thank you for what you bring to our Sangha. That was so perfect. Mm. That was not just reminding, but it was expanding. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Deborah. Yes, Barbara and or Bill, I guess that's Bill. Yes.
I'm right, I raised my hand. Well, I'm always happy to hear about the Anapanasati Sutta because there, I've heard so many different ways it's taught. Many thoughts. One of them that I find both frustrating and beautiful is the fourth tetrad in particular. I have a feeling that some of the words being used had idiomatic meanings that are lost to us, that we've lost a lot of context. So I think there are puzzles there that we'll never fully understand. And I think another thing is I like to look at the whole sutta as being like a map, because I've sometimes found myself in a third tetrad state, and I'll go, oh, wait a minute, I had no idea I was going to end up in the third tetrad and the fourth line there. You know, that's interesting that I managed to sort of like sneak in through a side door or something. Anyway, thank you very much. Really enjoyed this.
You're so welcome. And yeah, I love what you just said about sneaking in through the side door, because it can happen, right? We can go from one all the way down to middle of the fourth with just, you know, kind of quantum tunneling, no warning. And it's just nice to that this framework is laid out to give us a notion of, okay, what is that? What is that? And the idiomatic meanings, I definitely empathize. I didn't go into so much of the wordplay, but as many of you already know, the fading away or dispassion, viraga, originally meant the fading of dye and cloth. So that's one tiny glimpse of an idiom, which has resonances. And the idea was that, of course, ancient India and India today, the sun is very strong. So you leave something dyed out in the sun, it doesn't stay vibrant all that long before it starts fading, right? I love that one in particular because it also evokes the sense that this is a gradual process for most of us. It's many, many, many visits to these different beautiful glimpses or contacts with insight or practice that gather together to cause change. Okay, so that's enough of that. If you, Bill, if you're curious, a great place to look to learn more about the idioms is to look up scholarship on the Upanishads. The Buddha draws a stunning amount of his structures and language is wordplay based on the Brahmanical concepts of the time. And I have found it's really deepened my own knowledge to look at that. And if you contact me separately, I'll give you a couple of scholar names. I don't have them in my head right now. You have just a moment left. One last question or comment, anybody? Deborah, are you? You're muted.
Go ahead and start.
Because Barbara raised her hand.
Oh, sorry, Barbara.
No. Your website is liberatingdharma.com.
.org.
Thank you.
I just wanted to thank you for this, the idea of getting the glimpses and the insights in daily life. And just because I find as my practice continues, that's really important to me, that, you know, allowing for that and making, you know, preparing myself to do it and reminding myself. So I really appreciated that.
Beautiful.
Thank you.